Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today, we're going to have Robert David Steele back, and we've talked a lot about politics in Washington, geopolitical situations around the world, but we really haven't dove into his philosophies on open source everything engineering. So I really want to hear what all that is about and have him share with everybody what his main philosophies are and what he's trying to accomplish. Open source everything engineering in a nutshell is open source software, you know, like Linux that was built open source, and now it took over the whole industry. It's the operating system that runs all the major computers around. It's also about open source intelligence, except very limited items needed for security. Almost everything will be open right now. Almost everything is closed. Open society, open everything, he thinks. A world that works for all. Transparency, truth, and trust. So he's going to explain what all that's about. He has two books. One is the Open Source Everything Manifesto, and the other one is the Open Source Way. And all of those are free on his website. So you can go to robertdavidsteele.com and you can get those books for free. He also has a lot of other documents up there on his website for free. So you don't have to pay for his stuff, and he's really trying to get that out there. And if you want, I will also have links on my website at sarahwestall.com to his resources so you can see that. People are always asking about these things. So there you go. It's going to be there for you, and this time it's free. But before we get into that interview, I want to tell you about next week's shows. The shows we have lined up for next week are going to be really good. First, on Memorial Day, I'm going to do a tribute to the men and women who serve our country. I will be discussing ways for them to bring meaning into their lives after they serve. We will be having a great guest come on, and he's going to be helping me go through all that. We will also be discussing the dark side of serving our military. We have suicide is just sweeping through the veteran community, and we have a staggering rate of 22 per day, and this has been going on for a long time. They haven't republished what the rate is now, but from what I understand, it hasn't gone down. If anything, it's higher, and I think it's just because they are just doing so many trips overseas, so much combat. There's only so much a person can take, and they've been doing more than what is recommended, way more than what it's recommended for someone to be able to handle. And so the number of suicides have bypassed the number of combat deaths in Vietnam, and it's fast bypassing the number of combat deaths in World War I. I don't think people realize the magnitude of the price that we're paying with this continual war that we have going on. Now, I'm not necessarily an anti-war pacifist, but there's a point where we have to take a hard look at what the costs are in society and start to realize. Right now, it's all kind of pushed under the rug. People don't even realize what the cost to our society is because our veterans, our warriors, our service men and women are professionals. They don't talk about it. It's all volunteer. They're being paid on a volunteer basis. It's not what it used to be when we had a draft. And so it's a different deal. And so people don't really see what's truly going on unless you're part of that community. Okay. And then the next thing we're going to have on Wednesday and Friday, I bring back Dr. Sam. He's the man behind the Bosnian pyramids. And we will be discussing the latest discoveries and finds in Bosnia and around the world. It's really a fun show. We're going to talk about the scalar waves that's coming out of the pyramid and what that means. He has a lot of scientists working with him, and they're trying to figure out what the scalar waves are doing. He believes that the scalar waves are a communication of some sort across the universe, which is really fun to think about. He thinks the sun is somehow involved. He's also talking about that they found more tunnels underneath the pyramid system. They've excavated another 1,000 feet of tunnels. They found another level of tunnels that haven't been excavated yet. Very exciting stuff. They have a lot of science going on there, a lot of studies. I guess the cement that they found that are binding the materials together is the most powerful cement on the planet. Very fun. And I also talk about the fact that a lot of people in the mainstream think it's a fake site and all this stuff is made up. And I have a really hard time putting my head around all that, because how can you make up a pyramid? I mean, he claims it's the largest one in the world and it has the most excavation that any pyramid has had at the time when they can come forward and say that it's a pyramid. And to me, it's confusing, because at some point, wouldn't it just be obvious if it's the largest one in the world and they're doing a lot of excavation year after year? Isn't there a point where everything is just obvious? So I'm having a really hard time with this. The other thing is the science behind it. If the cement, if they're coming back with there being cement, that has to be man-made material. And if they're coming back with all these tunnels, and they're coming back with reports of biological material between the, you know, for the age of it, I'm just really confused over that whole situation, how it couldn't be just really obvious. The other thing is the whole country would have to be duped. He's the most famous person in Bosnia and they're very supportive of the project. So how does a person like that dupe a whole country and get millions of dollars from their government? And I just don't understand. And people year after year go back and volunteer and excavate, and archaeologists and scientists. How do you dupe that many people when you just go and you look at it? It's out there. It's in the open. So I don't know. So we're going to talk about that. It's a very, I just can't get my head around it. It's just so confusing that anybody could say it's not real. It's a fake. So I don't know. I guess maybe later I will be eating crow and, but, or either I'm eating crow or all the mainstream archaeologists are going to be eating crow, because in a certain amount of time, it will just become so obvious to everyone that you can't argue. I mean, I don't understand this whole thing, but anyways, we are also going to talk to Robert David Steele about more than just his open source engineering, which we're going to get into soon. But I wanted to ask him about the latest that was going on in Washington and with Trump. Many of you realize or know that we entered into a mega arms deal worth over $350 billion with Saudi Arabia. It's going to last over the next 10 years. It's the biggest ever in history. And also, there was a Middle Eastern conference in Saudi Arabia where all the leaders from the Middle East, with the exception of Iran, came and they met in a forum. And Trump gave a speech and there was a lot of fanfare and so forth. I wanted to get his take on that. You know, to me, Saudi Arabia is one of the most brutal regimes ever to exist in history. They have funded ISIS and Al-Qaeda. And we continue to partner with them and with known terrorists. So I want to understand and hear his take on this latest strategy and what we're doing. There's getting jobs. You know, I guess we're going to get jobs with this $350 billion deal. But at what price are we getting jobs? I mean, we're so desperate for jobs that we're going to fund terrorists. I don't understand this. And he's going to give us a little bit of insight on that. So let's not waste much more time and let's get right into our interview with Robert David Steele.
Hi, Robert. Welcome to the program. Welcome back to the program.
Oh, I love being on your show, Sarah.
Thank you. I like having you here, too. You are the top, one of the top guests, if not the top guests I have lately. People are really interested in what you have to say, which is good that you're out there talking and educating people.
Well, today I hope we'll talk about something that's not political.
Well, everything seems to somehow get political, but I think this is this will be different. Let's start off with, you were recently nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. Can you tell us a little bit about that story?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's certainly not something I deserve right now, but I was thrilled to have it happen. It happened because I started writing for Jan Kalvik, the editor of Defense and Intelligence Norway. It's a very, very good publication that really believes in the truth And after several of my articles appeared to me, he said to me one day, he said, Robert, you really have worked hard to change the craft of intelligence away from secrecy promoting war toward openness promoting peace and prosperity. And I said, yes, that's what I've been doing for 30 years. So he then went and consulted with one of the ministers, perhaps two ministers in Norway. And he said, hey, I think this guy deserves to be nominated. And one of them said, you're right. Here's how you do it. And so Jan wrote an article about me recommending me for the Nobel Peace Prize. And I received guidance from Norway about how to write the long form nomination. And he sent that to the minister and the minister sent it in. So I was also nominated, but technically people don't talk about the nominations. Bottom line is it's wonderful publicity for the concept of open source everything engineering and elevating the 5 billion poor and ending war.
Well, I think that's really great. Congratulations on that. It's an honor.
Well, I tell you what, I really, honest to God, I want to help President Trump, among others, win the Nobel Peace Prize with this idea.
Well, you've published two books, The Open Source Everything Manifesto and The Open Source Way. When and how did you begin to focus on the open source value proposition?
Oh, God, that's a great question. I was a spy. No, I was a Marine Corps infantry officer and then a spy for 9 years. And I always believed in secret intelligence and government can do no wrong. The Marine Corps blessed me by asking me to create the Marine Corps intelligence activity. I was the senior civilian. I spent $20 million on a top secret everything. It's just like Daniel Ellsberg talking to Henry Kissinger. I thought top secret was the cat's meow. And I had a little PC in the corner connected to the internet. And back in 1988, that was called The Source. That was the Google of 1988. The analysts were lining up for the PC inside of 2 weeks and ignoring their $20 million worth of analytic equipment with access to all of the NSA secrets and so forth. I said, what are you doing? And they said, there's nothing in the classified databases that has anything at all to do with Burundi, Haiti, Somalia, or all these other places that are not China, Russia, North Korea, or Libya. And I suddenly did the proverbial aha. And I realized that the US government, the secret intelligence community in particular, were completely empty. And so that's when I started the open source intelligence revolution in 1988. And we went on for 10 years after CIA rejected it, refused to deal with it. General Peter Schumacher heard me out at the U.S. Special Operations Command. And inside of 5 minutes, this brilliant man got it. He ordered the creation of an open source intelligence unit. Within a year, that unit was answering 40% of all of the intelligence requirements for all special forces worldwide, 40% for $5 million. Now compare that with General Tony Zinni saying that he got from a $70 billion secret intelligence community 4%. 4% for $70 billion, 40% for $5 million. That's the open source intelligence value proposition. And that's what really got me going on trying to teach everybody that we need to get back to the basics.
Well, and if that's the kind of money you're saving, that's what Trump is talking about. So hopefully he will listen to you.
I love that comment. Yes. You know, if Donald Trump wants to cut the U.S. government budget in half, which is easy to do because it's 50% waste, then he needs an open source agency that will give him holistic analytics, true cost economics, and the open source everything engineering alternative. Right now, the entire Western model has rightfully been called a failed model, because it is basically a model that is extremely wasteful, and it's focused on the people who receive the money, not the people who buy the product. So yes, Donald Trump could significantly cut the federal budget if he had an open source agency that can do for him what the secret intelligence world cannot do for him and what the Office of Management and Budget cannot do for him, because they don't do management and they don't do true cost economics.
Well, you started the open intelligence or the open source intelligence movement in 1988. Is there anyone else that stands out in your mind as a first mover in the open source arena?
Oh, thank you for saying that, because I love that question, because so many people think that I'm just trying to talk about me and my ideas, and that's not true at all. I stand on the shoulders of others. And if there's one person whose shoulders I stand on, his name is Richard Stallman. He was one of the first MIT hackers. He's the guy who invented free software. He doesn't like the term open source, but the bottom line is that Richard Stallman is perhaps the single greatest mind in the open source arena worldwide in any language. And I really, really respect this guy.
Well, when did the world first notice you in your new open source capacity? Is there anyone you credit with pointing the world out to you?
Well, yes and no. In 1992, Admiral Bill Studeman agreed to speak at a conference that I created, which scared the hell out of the CIA. It was a conference on open source intelligence, and 650 people showed up, including 15 Swedes. But very quickly, the people around Admiral Studeman realized that my ideas would cut the secret intelligence budget in half, and so they destroyed me. They basically have marginalized me for 30 years. The good news is that I continued to grow, I continued to expand, and I wrote the Open Source Everything Manifesto in 2012. Nobody noticed. It was badly marketed. But then in 2014, Nafiz Ahmed, a brilliant, brilliant author who's also written The User's Guide for Saving Civilization, he wrote a piece in The Guardian about the former spy championing open source intelligence. It got 33,000 shares, not views, shares, 33,000 shares in 3 days. It's now over 75,000 shares. And that is what not only put me on the map, but started attracting people to me so that now we've created a definition of open source everything engineering that is now sophisticated enough so that any country can do it across the board. So Nafiz Ahmed, God bless him.
Well, let's dive into the open source engineering. You have defined 9 major categories of open source innovation. Can you list them and talk about each one?
Oh, I would be very, very glad to, and I hope you'll point to the graphic. But the bottom line here is I listed 60 open source everything engineering elements in the book in 2012, and I had previously done a prior listing for Gnomedex in Seattle in 2007. But after some consultation with Mikkel Bouwens of the Peer-to-Peer Foundation, one of the greatest people I know, and Marcin Jakubowski from Open Source Ecology, we narrowed it down to 9 major categories. And the key about open source everything engineering is you have to do all 9. You can't do just one. You have to do all 9 to get the full synergistic value of it. So open data. All data, geospatial, historical, language data, all data has to be open so that you don't have to buy Microsoft to use it. Open decision support or open intelligence. That means open access to everything, open documents, open research. Right now, 1% of all scientific papers that are ever written get published. 1%. And the papers that are written represent perhaps 1% of what is known. So we need to move toward a world brain where every bit of knowledge is accessible to individuals online. Open governance, open money, open politics, open standards. We don't have democracies around the world. We have two-party tyrannies that rule in secrecy. Open health is huge. If Donald Trump were to pass a proper health care bill, such as Carl Denninger has written, he would literally balance the federal budget overnight. Open cures, open drugs, open procedures. PricewaterhouseCoopers has done a superb piece on how health in the United States is 50% waste. Waste in the United States of America is a profit center. Open infrastructure. This means open application program interfaces, open base transceiver station, which is basically a cell phone that's open, and open spectrum. Microsoft has retarded the entire information technology industry for 30 years. Because it kept constantly mutating and hiding its application program interfaces so that third-party developers couldn't reliably build on that. It's time we move past Microsoft, Google, Facebook, and Twitter. We need a new blockchain open architecture. We need an alternative internet that nobody can control, least of all Eric Schmidt, who is the father of what I call hashtag Google Gestapo. Open manufacturing. Open circuits, open hardware, open materials. This one's really important. Open provisioning, open energy, open food, and open water. I actually did a cost calculation for the United Nations for moving 1 million Somalis from hellholes in Kenya, Ethiopia, and Uganda into paradise in an unoccupied northeastern portion of Somalia, which had only three things: sunlight, dirt, and seawater. And I was able to get the cost for moving them and establishing them in a 1 million person metropolis with aquaponics and free energy and clean water and everything, $500 per person one time. For $500 million, I could lift those million Somalis up from poverty. So I believe we're on the verge. My good friend Sasha Stone has just demonstrated free energy in Bali. Tesla was, of course, repressed. The military-industrial complex, the bankers have all repressed free energy and other benefits to humanity. We're now at a point where we can provide free energy and unlimited clean water to every person on the planet. It's just a matter of doing it. And finally, you have open software and open space. And open software is Richard Stallman's free software, Libre software, open code. And open space is really kind of critical because that's the granddaddy. That's the core. Open cities, open design, and open innovation. It's really important for people to understand that open source everything is a mindset, a culture, it's a way of life, which is why I published a book called The Open Source Way as the second book. We can really, really do a lot of good for humanity in the next decade if everyone understands open source everything engineering.
So with all these things that you're saying, is there one way that you would sum it up is what the open source value proposition is?
Oh, God, that's a brilliant question. And let me point out that I have given you a graphic, which I hope you can show. It was created by Bojan Rajel in Slovenia. Essentially, the open source everything value proposition eradicates waste and corruption, helps everyone do more with less, and dramatically reduces the toxicity of the Western way of industrial production. Here's the bottom line. If we adopt the open source everything engineering paradigm, the post-Western paradigm, we can accomplish all 17 of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals in less than a decade at 10% of the cost of the failed Western paradigm. And I would like to point out that I have worked very closely with Marcin Jakubowski, and there's a John Deere tractor example. A John Deere tractor costs $200,000 and is impossible to repair in the field, to the point that farmers are suing for right to repair. It has to be very expensively moved out of the field to a secret factory, to a factory that does secret repairs. An open source everything tractor costs $20,000, 10% of what a John Deere tractor costs, and it's easy to repair in the field because the farmer can use plug-and-play parts and can even do 3D field reproduction of those parts, okay? I've written a briefing for Prime Minister Modi in India, The Ultimate Hack, Resilient Villages, Smart Cities, Prosperous Nations at Peace, and Unlimited Clean Water. Modi's highest priority is to clean the Ganges. So that, together with my Nordic Manifesto and my post on my article for the Russians on post-Western economic and engineering paradigm, all of this is explained in concise terms.
Well, you were just back from Thailand, and speaking about that article that you published about the post-Western economic and engineering paradigm that we're talking about, you published that in Russia, and you're just back from Thailand. What countries are considering your ideas on this?
Well, let me say, I went to Thailand to film a short documentary with Steven Seagal, one of my celebrity action heroes, who also turns out to be a very compassionate, intellectual man. We were filming a documentary on pedophilia as the Achilles heel of the deep state. And it's such a good documentary done by Sasha Stone, it may well go to the Cannes Film Festival. But when I announced on my website that I was going to Thailand, a series of events led me to one of the most powerful men in Thailand, who used his influence to adopt me for 2 days. He opened doors everywhere. I had a lecture at a major university. I spoke to a packed executive conference room at the National Intelligence Agency. I spoke with multiple generals and former prime ministers. The bottom line is that after I left, there was a four-hour meeting at the highest levels saying not only are this guy's ideas perfectly in harmony with our recently deceased king's view on a sustainable Thailand, but they're perfect for the crown prince who will be installed as king, as an initiative taking Thailand forward under the new royal leadership. So I'm deeply honored that these people got it. I mean, I've spent 30 years trying to get the Americans to understand this, and the level of corruption in the American deep state is just too profound at this point. So Thailand is one. My ideas have also been briefed to President Duterte. They are making their way toward General Secretary Xi in China. They're also being briefed in Burma. And I believe that Putin and Modi will talk about these when the India-Russia 70th anniversary meeting takes place. So finally, after 30 years, and I think the Nobel Peace Prize nomination helps, finally, people are starting to understand that these ideas can literally lift up the 5 billion poor and create infinite wealth. So I'm a very happy man right now.
Well, it seems like there's a lot of obstacles in some countries to get this installed. If you were looking at any given country, how would you go about institutionalizing the open source everything engineering revolution?
Well, that's a hugely vital question. Thank you. Thank you for asking that. I think it's in two parts. Part one is nationalize the central bank, because the greatest saboteur of national prosperity is the central bank, which is not a government bank. It's a private bank that is owned by the Rothschilds. The Rothschilds basically own all of the central banks around the world. They personally appoint all of the leading bankers, and they are the single most subversive influence, along with the Vatican, of prosperity from the bottom up. So that is kind of like a counterintelligence measure. I have drafted, over the years, I have drafted a concept for an open source agency that has been approved by the Office of Management and Budget twice, at an initial operating capability of $125 million going toward $2 billion. I hope that President Trump will eventually read this memo. The open source agency has two parts. It has an information bureau and it has an engineering bureau. The information bureau is responsible for supporting evidence-based decision-making by both Congress and the executive. And it puts everybody on the same page, and it provides intelligence, decision support, that can be shared with the public. If Trump were to do that and also have a Trump channel, we could feed the truth directly to the public and have a two-way dialogue with the public using poll mole.vote. I'm really high on them. Poll mole.vote allows a trumpet to go out and 150 million answers to come back in, all of which can be weighted by citizens at the county, state, and regional levels. And he can then see on a single presidential dashboard what everybody is thinking at the congressional district level, by demographic, by issue, and so forth. So there's a lot we can do with open source information in support of presidential and congressional decision making. And of course, it destroys the fake news media. It destroys the New York Times, the Crap News Network, the Washington Post. These people are all part of the deep state trying to destroy President Donald Trump. And then the second part, the open source everything engineering part, is the one that mobilizes universities and entrepreneurs worldwide, not just in the United States, and creates open source everything engineering alternatives to the dysfunctional Western offerings that we have now, all of which are 50% waste and have true costs: use of water, consumption of fuel, expelling of toxins into the air, child labor at 50 cents a day. People have never really calculated what it costs. If you actually understood the true cost of every Western artifact, you probably would want to go live in the jungle, because most of what we are paying for is not only not worth it, it's destroying the earth. So an open source everything agency is the starting point. And I was very pleased that in Thailand, they not only understood this idea, they said, you know what, we'll go you one better. We should have an association of Southeast Asian nations open source agency and network. I certainly think that Putin should create one for Russia, and China should create one for China and Central Asia. I'd like to see one in Istanbul that is dominated by Iran and Turkey, and that is focused on the threats in the Middle East, most of which have been funded by the Saudis, including ISIS, which is a creation of the Saudis and the Americans. So I think the implementation ideas are there. I know how to do this, but it needs presidential weight to actually take off.
Well, how does it work harmoniously with current business in the sense that they all want to keep their stuff private?
Well, that's a really good point. And it's, I almost feel sympathy for the gulag and the re-education in China, because there are a lot of people that need to be re-educated. Our educational system has created a mix of drones and mandarins who all are refusing to be connected to the truth in the case of the mandarins and don't know what the truth is in case of the drones. So we need a massive educational effort. But most importantly, we need a presidential commitment to an economic and social safety net. Now, one of my friends is Del Spurlock. He was Deputy Secretary of Labor under Ronald Reagan. And he created this brilliant idea of a joint labor military training institute that would literally retrain every American put out of work by the 21st century into new work that would be full employment with benefits and so forth. So you've asked a very, very important question. We have to have an exit strategy. But what most business people will find, just as if we did tax reform and we eliminated tax, what most business people will find is that if they adopt open source everything engineering,
so
they can do more with less, pay fewer taxes,
to
have more customers, and have
right
a better
are going
footprint
to bypass
of good.
The other countries that are not?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I'm looking at India and Indonesia, as well as Thailand and the Philippines, as special cases. And many people have said to me that Burma, Myanmar, is ready for a breakout as well. I think this is going to take on a life of its own. I mean, I would like
well,
to spend the rest of my
be
life
Linux.
Furthering
you know, it's
these
an operating
ideas
system that started out with
and helping people
idea,
be educated about how to do
industry.
This. Yes, it has. And in fact, people talk about, well, why should I write open source code if I don't get paid for it? Open source code is like a calling card. Linus Torvalds, who created Linux, is now a multimillionaire because he created an entire industry. So the open source code actually sets the stage for value added financially compensated
so to be clear,
capabilities
open source
that follow
everything
on.
Engineering
what
is a
Linus Torvalds has done
track,
for software, I want to do
for
everything.
There are two other social science tracks. Can you explain this? Yes, I have.
Oh, you've done your homework. Okay, the three things that I want to put together. And I really, let me start by talking about the failure of the smart city concept, okay? IBM is a failed company. They haven't made money in the last 3 or 4 years. Watson is a joke. They're about to implode. But they keep bringing up this smart city concept, which basically means putting 21st century communications and computing on top of 1970s technology. Okay, which is extraordinarily wasteful. Most cities today are designed very, very badly. So what you really need to do is create a new meta PhD for stewardship that combines the technical track of open source everything engineering with two social science tracks, holistic analytics and true cost economics. And what I have found, and I've got a graphic that illuminates this, is that to have a truly smart city, you need to do what Buckminster Fuller called ephemeralism, doing more with less. Every single piece of the smart city has to be designed with enormous intelligence, and it has to be a holistic enterprise, and it has to have authentic true cost economic value propositions in every single piece. I really think we need a school of future-oriented hybrid governance in every country. And it should become the Oxford, Cambridge, MIT equivalent for every country. And it sits above all of
is
the other universities that are doing more mundane
Nobel
things. It becomes the core of the national brain. Oh, I'm so glad you asked that, because it's another opportunity for me to say there are so many other people out there that deserve recognition. Marcin Jakubowski, without question. He's a PhD. He created open source ecology. He's created the Global Village Construction Set, which is 55 devices built only with open source everything engineering that cost 10%.
So do what their you counterparts think that in the Western the United world States call. Would
so
ever
Marcin
get on
Jakubowski,
and
hands down, is worthy of the Nobel Prize today.
I suppose the corruption, you pointed to that. Is there a chance the United States could start to get on board with this, or at least in pockets?
Yes, there really is. I mean, God bless Donald Trump and God bless Bernie Sanders, because they both tapped into a populist rage. And this populist rage is white, black, and Latino, as well as Indian, the ones that are left. We genocided the Indians in this country. There is a deep, deep anger among the 99% because the 1% have essentially concentrated wealth and screwed over the public, and they've killed the golden goose. Open source everything engineering is how our legitimately elected president, Donald Trump, can not only cut the federal budget in half, but he can lift up the whole country. For example, his infrastructure vision can be realized at 10% of the cost. All right, people are telling him he needs $1 trillion. No, he does not need $1 trillion. He needs better design, smarter, smaller cities spread out with high-speed rail, emphasis on public transportation, pedestrian, bicycles, and so forth. Sadly, Trump is surrounded by traitors and mediocrities who are stuck in the 20th century and the 19th century. If he were to have a grand strategy, if he were to have a national strategy council instead of a, with lowercase, a clerk instead of a czar, instead of a national security council, which is simply a pimp for the horrors of war, then Donald Trump could lead the United States into the fastest economic recovery ever seen in history. And it would be one that would benefit Main Street rather than Wall Street. So, yes, my ideas are absolutely immediately implementable in the United States of America.
But there are leaders of other countries that, if they implement your ideas, would themselves be worthy of the Nobel Peace Prize. And you've said that. So who specifically? You've already kind of commented to some of them, but who do you have in mind when you're talking about this?
Yes. You know, when I think about Donald Trump, I think about the fact that he's right where John F. Kennedy was when Alan Dulles and the deep state back then were trying to create a war with Cuba and the Bay of Pigs and all of this. And what Kennedy discovered talking to Khrushchev through back channels was that his best friend was Nikita Khrushchev. And their worst enemies were their own generals. The Russian generals wanted a war with the United States, and the American generals wanted a war with the United States. So I believe that Trump's best friends today are named Vladimir Putin and Xi and Modi and possibly others like Duterte, okay? I think that Donald Trump is only lacking a house cleaning and a small team that is able to speak to him with absolute integrity, combined with his being willing to treat the other world leaders as brothers and sisters and peers. And if he and Putin and Xi and Modi declare peace and put the Rothschilds, the Vatican, the military-industrial complex back into a very small box, Donald Trump can earn the Nobel Peace Prize within 2 to 3 years. Particularly if he closes all U.S. military bases overseas and stops funding the 40 dictators that we love so much at taxpayer expense. So I think Donald Trump has a chance. But if Trump won't do it, then I'd say that Modi, Xi, and Putin will. And whoever's running Indonesia these days is also very important.
And they just had the biggest arms sales ever to Saudi Arabia. So where do you find, I mean, it's hard to read that.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And we also have to know that we recently did a post on Jared Kushner, who was overheard talking to an Israeli intelligence officer about giving Saudi Arabia nuclear arms so they could wage a limited nuclear war on Iran. This is insane. I mean, Kushner's a kid playing with toys that he does not understand, that can kill people and destroy the world. However, although Donald Trump has given every evidence of having been captured by the deep state in the last few weeks, I am assured by people who are very close to him that he is, in fact, playing a long game, and that he has a side deal with Putin, that he understands very clearly that the Saudis and the Israelis are the greatest enemies to peace in the world, and he has a plan. And I will just say to you that from my perspective, although Cynthia McKinney and I have created hashtag unrig beyond Trump and Sanders, we've created We the People Unity for Integrity. And I led a meeting with black leaders and alt-right leaders in New York City on the 17th and 18th of May. I will support Donald Trump until it's clear that he has completely abandoned the public. And I'm not there yet. But at the same time, just like Ronald Reagan, trust but verify. At the same time, Cynthia McKinney and I are creating a movement that is going to go beyond Trump and Sanders. We're starting a 501c4 and a 527. Russ Vernet is going to be our campaign manager. We're asking Ed Rollins to be our fundraiser. We think we can raise $25 million to occupy the front lawns of every member of Congress this summer, because they go home for the summer. They can't avoid those pesky constituents. And we're going to try and force every member of Congress to sign the Integrity Pledge and pass the Election Reform Act of 2017 in September. Let me state in the clearest possible terms.
So you met with all the black leaders,
Donald Trump,
or with
a large group of powerful black leaders, we will go forward without him. Yes. Well, you know, what I really want to say to you is that the black people are now starting to understand that they've been betrayed by their intellectual leaders. Les Cornell West, whose book Democracy Matters is absolutely superb. What the black people are understanding in the United States of America today is that Bill and Hillary Clinton put more black people in jail than there were slaves at the beginning of the Civil War. The Clinton crime bill has been used to help banks put black people in jail so they can gentrify their neighborhoods and profit from the misery of the black people. And Cynthia, God bless her, she's a goddess. She really sees the value proposition that I put forward, which is that the alt-left and the alt-right, with people of color and Latinos and small parties and independents in the middle, can agree that the deep state is our common enemy and that election reform is our common solution. So we set aside all ideological and issue differences, and we focus on one thing and one thing only: restoring integrity to the U.S. government. And I believe that the GOP, the Republican Party, is going to self-destruct, is going to be destroyed by leaks that will destroy at least six senior Republican senators who are really bad pedophiles. Denny Hassert, Speaker of the House, was the tip of the iceberg. The Republican Party is going to be destroyed by pedophilia, and Donald Trump will not survive that unless he leads the Election Reform Act of 2017 and he barnstorms the country. I want him to do 50 states in 30 days with Ron Paul, Dennis Kucinich, Jesse Ventura, Ralph Nader, Patrick Buchanan, Virgil Good, myself, Cynthia McKinney. If he does that, he will be the greatest president ever. And he will have a power base on the one hand and an open source everything engineering solution on the other hand, that will create a world at peace.
Yeah, they don't need it. They don't need to go somewhere else. They can work at home and be prosperous.
A world at peace that is prosperous.
When
all those pesky illegal immigrants stay
home.
When do you
think will come out in a real way? I know it's come out in alternative media, but it really needs to... people are mad. People hate it.
I would say... Yeah, I would say it's time for this summer. You know, George Soros is planning a violent American spring. His plans were delayed in part by my publicizing what he was planning to do. But the early days in July are shaping up to be a very violent American spring. And the public needs to understand that Berkeley was so violent because the university president, the mayor, and the governor all wanted it to be violent. University presidents, mayors, and governors are all part of the establishment. They're all part of the two-party tyranny. They're all against Trump no matter what they tell him. Okay? And Mike Pence, I particularly single out as stabbing Donald Trump in the back every single day. So what Trump needs to do is mount a counteroffensive. And so I would love to see him lead, basically preempt George Soros and lead this Chautauqua team of speakers about unity for integrity across this country starting on, say, June 19th. Okay? from June 19th to July 19th, I would love to have Donald Trump lead America in a conversation about the 12 elements of the Election Reform Act and how that will restore integrity. It will allow independents, libertarians, greens, and others to get into Congress in 2018.
And this that isn't a left-right thing. This is everybody coming together.
And that
it's not an extremist
allows Donald
view.
Trump to be the greatest
it's really
president
right
ever.
Down, you know, straight down the middle or whatever you call it. Yeah, it's really
it's
not an extremist.
Holistic. It's one for all and all for one. I mean, Soros and the deep state are about dividing and conquering. They're about creating gender wars and color wars and class wars and all of this stuff. Donald Trump can be the first president in modern history to unite the public and make it Wall Street and the deep state is the enemy. He can basically put the power back in the hands. Cynthia McKinney recently wrote Memorandum for the President 3.0, and that's been posted at Phi Beta Iota. And I've commented in a press release, the power that Cynthia McKinney and I have to bring together the tribes, plus the power that Donald Trump has to inspire everybody to come back together, it's game over for the 1%. We can actually create a restored direct democracy in the United States that is of, by, and for we the people. And Donald Trump has the power to do that. It's harder for Cynthia and I to do that without Donald Trump being our leader.
How can they learn that and understand it?
Oh, God. Well, thank you. I mean, my personal website is robertdavidsteele.com. And on the landing page for that website is the original article that recommended me for the Nobel Peace Prize, a number of intervening references, and then at the very bottom is the long-form Nobel Peace Prize nomination that the Norwegians guided me in creating. And that has my structured work with links. At PhiBetaIota.net, we have created a page called #OnRig, and I'm very pleased to say it's gone viral. If anybody searches on any search engine for #UnRig, we own all of the first screen and
Excellent.
Most of the second screen.
Well, thank you
so
pound much
sign
for joining me today and educating
on now Donald
us on
Trump's
this, because
to
I don't think you've
or lose.
Gone out and officially educated people on what your paradigm is and what you're trying to do. Well, excellent. You have a wonderful day.
This is a first, Sarah. I'm so grateful to you for taking the time and trouble to do this. Thank you. All right. God bless America. God bless Donald Trump. Bye-bye.
And that's all we have today, folks. I hope you have an amazing Memorial Day weekend and you take some time on Monday to remember all of our fallen soldiers and the people around the world that are dying in wars. And take some time to listen to my podcast. You can get it on my website, sarahwestall.com. You just click on the button at the top of the homepage and you can listen to it live there as well. And it's streaming all over the place, over 100 different channels. And also I will be posting it up on YouTube so you can watch it there as well. Again, my tribute to the soldiers, the men and women of this country who serve in our wars. And I also want to tell you that I have a book that is out. It's called The Wrong Side of History. It's important information there. And I hope you will get an opportunity to read it and share it. And for those who don't like to listen to podcast or radio, it's a great way for them to just read. It's an interview with Senator Black. It's also the letter that he wrote to Assad is included in the book. And he talks about, in his own words, why he wrote that letter. He consequently made a trip to visit President Assad after he wrote that letter in 2016. And the book talks about, the interview talks about why he wrote that letter and what's in it. And what he learned when he was in Syria. It's important, the information that's there. And the big thing, the big takeaway is that if Assad falls and we continue funding terrorism, terrorists in that part of the world, there will be a mass ethnic cleansing of that region. Christians will be slaughtered. Moderate Muslims will be slaughtered. It'll be a horrifying situation. He's estimating over 4 million people will be killed, and then it'll sweep and continue across Europe. But even so, it'll be just a disaster, and we will be funding a second Holocaust, and our tax money, our soldiers, we will be responsible for that horrific situation if we continue to fund terrorism and fund the worst characters in the world. And so that book, I really highly recommend to everyone to read that. And if they don't want to purchase it, you can always listen to my podcast and my interview. It's up on YouTube. It's also on my website with Senator Richard Black. And the book, of course, has the letter that he sent, and the podcast doesn't. And I have some other things that I included in the book, but you'll get the gist of it in the podcast. And so at least if you don't want to pay for it, you can get it free that way. I just highly recommend it. So everybody, again, sarahwestall.com, you can get all that information. And I really hope you have an amazing weekend and have some time with your friends and family.